Today's daf in the second Sanhedrin brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh is daf Lamed Zayin. We're holding the Halakha Mishnah at the bottom of Lamed Vav Omud Beit. Sanhedrin Hayta Kechatzi Agor Nagula. The shape of a Sanhedrin was a semicircle. And the semicircle is basically a goren, which is a threshing floor, is usually round. So this is a chatzi goren, and therefore it's a semicircle. And of course, the remez to the goren comes from many different areas, which we've seen in the Chumash, in Tanakh. So we use that, the moshul of the goren. And what's the reason for sitting in a semicircle? It's very straightforward. We need for all of the dayanim to be able to be noseh v'noten. They have to see each other when you're talking to someone. If you don't have Zoom, the only thing you can do is actually sit in a semicircle, because that way you get to see everybody. So it's almost as good as having a screen in front of you, right, with everyone's picture. So if we would make it a full circle, we'd have a problem, because then we wouldn't be able to see the Edim. We wouldn't be able to see the Bali Dinim. And everybody has to be able to see those Edim and Bali Dinim as they're talking. So this way, if it's a semicircle, everybody gets to see each other, and everybody gets to see the Edim and the Bali Dinim. Ushnei sofrei hadayanim omdim lifneihem, echad miyamin ve'echad mismol, v'kotvim divrei hamechayvim v'divrei hamezakim. And we have these two special secretaries that would be standing one to the right and one to the left of the Av Beis Din, and they would be writing down exactly what every one of the dayanim said. Now, there's a machlokas rishonim. According to the Rambam, what this means is that one was dedicated to writing down only the words of those who were in favor of acquittal, and the other one was only writing the words of those who were in favor of conviction. And that way they would be able to concentrate without having to go back and forth between their mindsets as they was writing. They would lose track. So, we'll see that that's clearly the sheet of Reb Yehuda that's coming up. But the question is, what Reb Yehuda exactly was arguing about? So Rambam understands that everybody holds. Rashi holds that each one of them was writing down everything, and that the point of having two of them was for redundancy, so that we could make sure that there were no mistakes in one or the other. Reb Yehuda says, no, there were actually three. One of whom was writing the Divrei HaMezakim, one of whom was writing the Divrei HaMechayvim. So this, the Rambam understands that that's, everybody agrees to that. The additional point of Reb Yehuda is that we had a third who was a redundancy writer, and he would write the Divrei HaMechayvim and the Divrei HaMezakim, and that way we would have a backup, albeit imperfect, because he had to write everything, but nonetheless, it serves both as the concentration that the Tanakhama was learning, and also for the backup, as Rashi was learning. And that's what Reb Yehuda holds, is that we need both. V'shalosh shorot shetamidei chachamim yoshvim lefneihem. Now, in front of that Beis Din of Esrim V'shalosh, we also had 23 Talmidim that would be in the same type of semicircle, so it would be facing the semicircle of the court, and they would be one behind each other. At least that's the way most of the Rishonim understand. There are some who learn that the Talmidei Chachamim in front of them were not in a semicircle, but the point is that we needed, remember, to be able to continue to bring up new Dayanim in the event of deadlock or the event of the death of a Dayan. So we would have to bring up people that were prepared to be part of the courtroom. So they just pop outside and hail someone down to be a judge, obviously. So this was a long procedure, as we're going to see, in which over a period of years, people that would come in at the end of the last row would gradually be moved up as they became more and more the leaders, and the others had been used up in the Beis Din and so on. And by the time they were ready to move up and get smicha and become part of the Beis Din themselves, they were already well-versed and experienced dayanim. So this is a wonderful experience to be selected to be even the last member of these three rows. And that way, ultimately, you're on straight on a career path to wonderful dayanut, which unfortunately doesn't make any money, but it's still a career path. Okay, so what would happen over here? Kol echad v'echad makirat mikomo. Every one of these seats was a specific seat. If you're number one on row one, you are not the same as number two on row one. And if you're number 23 on row two, you're not the same as number one on row three, you know, because you're like way ahead of him. So basically, each time that you needed to take up a new dayan, let's say one of the dayanim dies. So if, remember, in the event that we have a dayan who doesn't know how to determine the din, and he becomes useless for this bezin, we bring up two new dayanim, because we don't want to have a bezin shakul. So, but what we could be talking about over here when we need one person would be in a case where a dayan suddenly drops dead or he was unable to appear, whatever. So in that case, who would we take? We would take the first person in the first row. So in other words, that would be number one in row one. And then what would happen was, is that the last person in the second row would then, the first person in the second row would then move up to be the last person in the first row. And then that would leave open the last position in the second row, which case the first person in the third row would move up now into the second row. And then he would have an open space for a new Talmud who was just starting out on his Dayanut career. And because of that, we then are borin lemod echad min hakahal, and then, of course, we see who passed his bechinas, and he gets to be put into the moshivan otor b'shlishit. He sits in the third row in the last seat. So each person is constantly aware of where he is in this hierarchy, and that's what we mean when we see kasei kol echad v'echad makir et mikomo. But the new person would not take the place of the person who had just been selected. He wouldn't take the empty place. He would sit in the place that is just appropriate for him, which is the last place. Now, how do we know that there's this din of there being a semicircle and that everybody needs to be able to see each other and to communicate effectively? Omer v'achu baruch Nina, this is Murumas in a pasuk. The Omakra, Sharech Agan Hasahar, Al Yechasar Hamazik. So as we know, many of the beautiful psukim in Shir HaShirim, which are very strong sexual metaphors, are remuzim to the beauty of Yisrael and to the beauty of the Besdin of Yisrael, or the army of Yisrael, to the Ruchnius of Yisrael. So this one is talking about your navel. So he's talking to his lover here in the story, and your navel is so beautiful, it's like the shape of the moon in Half Moon Bay, remember, in California. So it's like Half Moon Bay, exactly what we're talking about over here, right? So this is like Half Moon Bay, which is an agan, literally Half Moon Bay. Wow, fantastic. Next time you drive by Half Moon Bay, Dr. Barry, you know what you're thinking about. You're chasering over this daf. There you go. So what do we mean by shararech? What is your navel? So the marshal to a navel is basically the source where your initial nourishment comes in to you as a fetus, as you're growing. And that is Sanhedrin. That is constantly, that's the place where you are connected directly to all of the nourishment from the Torah. And therefore, the Sanhedrin was called the navel. Lama nikra shmat shorerech, she yoshevet betiburo shel olam. And it's right there at the very, very center of the earth. Because remember, as we understood, was that the Lishkat HaGazit has to be right next to the area where we had the Evan HaShetiyah, where the world was grown from, and Mitzion, Michlal Yofi, all of the various psukim tie into this same metaphorical sense of beauty and connection. And that's the essence, actually, of the whole Maseches Sanhedrin that we need to always keep in mind. And then means that this is also called an Agan because Agan is the lotion of Megin. She Megina al kol olam kulo. This Sanhedrin is basically the protection of the entire world, in which there's a dedication to justice and to reality that prevents the descent into chaos, which we were coming so close to. And when we say Hasahar, so Hasahar is actually this idea, moon. And the moon, what we mean over here is the half moon, half moon bay. So the Sahar, particularly she doma la Sahar, Al Yechasar HaMozeg, and the Muzeg means, usually refers to, wine that is blended. Remember, they used to blend water into the wine to make it drinkable in those days. And what that means is make sure that the mezigah is correct, which teaches us that if one of the dayanim needs to go out of the room, he has to first make certain that there is a minimal functioning Sanhedrin in that room, so that albeit there's not all 71, but there may be actually a Sanhedrin Ketana. So if there's Esrim v'shlosha, then fine. Then he's allowed to leave the room. But if not, Im yesh Esrim v'shlosha k'neged Sanhedrin Ketana yotze, v'im lav eino yotze. So this is the reason that we talk about a mazik, because basically the mazik, the standard mazik, we talked about Rova's mazik, but the standard mazik is two water to one wine. So the same thing is true over here. You basically have a Sanhedrin, Ketana of 23, Keneged, the large president of Shivim, the Echa. But Imla Veino Yotze. If not, you're not allowed to leave. Now, of course, this doesn't mean you don't leave ever, because we already saw that the entire Sanhedrin went out. What we're talking about before, why was the entire Sanhedrin out of the Mokum of Sanhedrin in the case of the Zaki Mamre, who found Sanhedrin in Beit Pagi? That, so that, the Mefarshim say that's all for Tzarech HaMitzvah. Over here, we're asking whether a Dayan is allowed to go out for any type of personal need. Anyway, once we're already talking about this pasuk, we want to continue discussing the metaphors in this pasuk, in which once we talked about your belly button, now we're going to be talking about your tummy. So, bitnech ka'arimat chitim. So your tummy is like a pile of wheat. What does that mean? Ma'arimat chitim akol ne'ani mimena. Basically, fundamental nourishment is coming to everybody. Anybody can utilize that as the most basic nourishment. Af Sanhedrin hakol nehenin mita'amehim. Everyone that has any connection to the din is going to be blown over by the beautiful center of life, the pillar of life that is the Sfaras of Sanhedrin. And when it says suga b'shoshanim, that's an interesting metaphor. So it means that there's hedges around the Agan HaZohar, and that those hedges, again, here we're talking about your beautiful lover. I mean, that's a very common kind of metaphor for lovers, that are surrounded by roses and so on. So this is, your Sanhedrin is hedged with roses in the sense that what? Sha'afilu kesuga shel shoshanim lo yifritzu ben peratzot. The incredible power of Sanhedrin is that even if the hedge, so to speak, what's the hedge? The hedge is that we make, in fact, the hedges around the Torah. That's exactly what Sanhedrin does by making these takonas and so on. So those, how powerful do those have to be? You know, the famous Hasidic story in which, let's see if we can find any kind of illicit drugs. You know, all you need to do is walk outside, you get whatever drugs you want. Then now let's see if you can find any chametz b'Pesach. Forget it. Nobody's got chametz b'Pesach. You see the difference? That's suga b'shoshanim. So we say, asay siyag la Torah. So what is the chachomim? What do they have to do to make a siyag la Torah? They have to give you a 50-year jail sentence for having 10 cents of drugs in your pocket until Trump comes along and lets you out of jail. No. All they have to do is say something. And that's enough, so that all you have is roses. But that's enough to keep a person of Yisrael from being over on an iser. It's a beautiful mashal, no? All right. So, v'hayna d'yomale, ahu mina l'Rav Kahana. This is a beautiful insight, because there was once a maisa where a famous mean said to Rav Kahana, you know, you guys make pretend that you've got all these things in place, you know, it's usher to be alone with a woman, but you allow Anita to be alone with her husband, you know, and that's supposed to be okay. I mean, it's totally inconsistent. You've got over here this super inflammable material, which is an oret. It's like oret ha-pishtan. It's like it blows up in a second. So you've got fire right there next to the most inflammable material you have, but nothing's going to catch on fire. I mean, come on, man. These guys are going to jump into bed together. So Rav Kahana said to him, that's because you don't understand Klal Yisrael at all. The Torah was made on us that suga b'shoshanim is enough. All you need to do is say, uh-uh. And that's enough to keep people away from anything. Sha'afilu kisuga b'shoshanim lo yifritzu ben pratzot. If the only thing that you have is a beautiful hedge of roses, they're never going to walk past that hedge. They're beautiful. But that's only a madriga of Yisrael. And that, in general, you can't expect that people are going to be in that type of situation and not be chayte. Reish Lakish omer mihacha. Let's say kipelach harimon rakatech. Going on to the physical metaphors of the lover, so your temples are compared to like a pomegranate, or one section of a pomegranate. What is that supposed to mean? So actually the word for temple is the same word for empty. And the rakatech would therefore mean, afilu reka nimshebach, famous beautiful drasha, are meleim mitzvot karimon. They are as filled with mitzvot as a pomegranate is filled with those little seeds. Each one of those little seeds is a different mitzvah. So even the rekanim shebach, I mean, what's their big mitzvahs? I mean, the rekanim mamish are people, they never show up to davening, they never put on tefillin, what kind of rekanim? Where do they have all these mitzvahs? But remember that it says that if a person had an opportunity to do an aveira and he doesn't do it, then that's considered to be a mitzvah for him, right? So the reikanim shebeh, apparently that's what it means. Even the people who are empty are filled with the mitzvahs of not doing the wrong thing when others would. Rabbi Zera says, actually, that's miyacha. Vayorach et reyach bigadav. So remember when Yaakov Avinu walked in pretending to be Esav? So it says over there that Yitzchak Avinu smelled the beautiful smell of his clothing. And what we understood that to mean is not clothing, but rather bogdav. Bogdav means the worst, the renegadal Jews that are doing the worst kind of things. The Gemara brings the example of the Jew who went in to take out the menorah from the Beis HaMikdash and put it in his living room. I mean, that's like pretty low stuff. But even they are given over. So it is actually, I think it's Reb Tzadok who points out that the brachas, it's a very strange thing, you know, because Yitzchak Avinu was not giving over the Birchas Avram at that point. He was giving over brachas that were suitable for Esav, not that were suitable for Yaakov, and he thought that these are the brachas that you need for Esav. So it's only when he found that Yaakov Avinu had parts of himself that were so similar to Esav. So when he smelled that, he said, oh, I see, I need to give these brachas in order to give that extra power to the bogdim of Yaakov Avinu. So that would mean that even the bogdim were now given this extra power of being able to be emet b'kedusha, and therefore, that's the marker of our trusting a man, married man, who is allowed to be together with a wife that he's not allowed to have relations with. Hanu biryuni davi bishvuvuta de Rabbi Zera. There were these juvenile delinquents that were living in Rabbi Zera's neighborhood. I mean, these people were just outrageous. You'd keep the whole neighborhood up all night with their wild parties and terrible people. And Rabbi Zera, he used to be so nice to them, would invite them over to the house, would have them as this b'nei bayit, having makariv luhu. The more they were bad, the more he was makariv them, because he wanted them to be chazer b'tshuva. So he felt that if the more he's makariv him, the greater the chances are. And all the other rabbonim and Alon was furious, like, what the heck are you doing over here being nice to these guys? These guys are terrible. Okay. And he would just explode at them. Anyway, so everybody else was angry at him. I became the rabbonim. When Rabbi Zera was nifter, so these juvenile delinquents, they say, good heavens, what are we going to do now? Until now, we had the little guy with the burnt legs. Remember, Rabbi Zera burnt his legs that time when he was hiding out there. Anyway, so the little one with the burnt legs, He used to pray for us all the time, you know, so we could afford to be Rishoyim. But now that he's dead, who's going to take care of us? We're going to have to do tshuva ourselves. Vey, vey. Anyway, so they ended up doing tshuva because Ashtaman boy Alan Rachame. Here will be Libayu, the avdu teshuva. So at that moment, they ended up actually doing tshuva. So you see this keach that is hidden inside of even the Rekani. Okay, so that concludes the analysis of the pasuk, the beautiful psukim, Mishir Hashirim. Now getting back to the Mishnah. So we had shalosh shurot of these talmidim that are in front, and then we move everybody up. So Omer Abaye, so what that means in the Mishnah, I mean, when it says that you put him in a place that is ro'i for him, it does not mean that we do a reassessment and see whether this guy actually belongs maybe in seat number 15B, right? No, it means that everybody moves. That's the way that the Mishnah puts it. It's just speaking nicely when it says ro'ilo. And the kinaide kulu naide, the moment that one of these judges is moved up, then the entire three rows move, everybody moves up one seat. So, I mean, can't one of them say, I don't want to move up. I mean, until now I was number one. My ticket read 1C. You know, what am I now? 23B? I mean, I feel like an idiot going from number one to number 23. That's not fair. Somebody would ask me, okay, where do you sit? I sit at number one. I don't have to talk about it. So I sit at number one. What do we say now? I sit in number 23. Now I'm all the way in the tail. Omer Abaye, well, you know what it says in the Mishnah Novice? Better to be a tail to lions than to be a head to foxes. So now you're a tail to lions. You should be very happy. What a sweet Gemara today. All right. Anyway, moving on to the next Halakha Mishnah without our Richie, who's busy, I imagine, at least I hope, at least busy skiing and not just involved in sitting in Manhattan somewhere. So, Ketzad Zokta Halakha Mishnah. I don't think Doc is hiding out today either. I don't know what, you know, we're being left by all the people we count on. So, Zokter Halakha Mishnah, Ketzad Ma'aymin Et Ha'edim. So, remember, we said Ma'aymin Et Ha'edim, we spoke about Ma'aymin Et Ha'edim, but they named Mamanut, and we ended up recognizing that the only way to really scare them about anything is to force them to realize that they're the ones that are going to look like idiots, and they shouldn't think that they're hot stuff and that people are relying on them to get false testimony. They're looked down on as B'nai Belial. But how about when it comes to Edei Nefashot? So how do you get them to actually be afraid? Now, we already said that when it came to Dinei Mamonot, there was no way that we could actually, that seems to be the sugya ended up before, whatever you tell them, they're not going to believe it affects them. Remember, you know, we tell them this brings dever and say, nah, people don't die before their time. Okay, so, I mean, how is that going to change? If we're talking about Enei Nefashot, this is an astonishing Mishnah because, I mean, Rashi explains the entire Mishnah without telling us his logic based on the understanding that the question of the Mishnah is to be understood in light of the way we had problems with the previous Mishnah about Ma'aymin al Edei Momonos. So what are we going to do that is going to be in the same line as what we did with the Dinei Momonos? So, first of all, we would bring them into like this private room and we would talk to them. And we said to them, look, are you jumping to some kind of conclusion? Or maybe you heard from someone else who saw, and you're basically, it's just sort of what we call hearsay evidence, you know. You didn't hear directly, but people are talking about it. Or literally, you heard it directly from a witness. And he told you, look, I can't come into court, but I'm telling you, it's what I saw. Maybe it's aid me pina aid. And I understand it was from the most reliable person in the world. It was the Gadol Hador. And he told you, this is what I saw. You know, I mean, you don't understand. We're going to put you through hell, man. We're going to cross-examine you with expert cross-examiners who are going to trip you up if there's anything. We're going to find out. So, and you need to recognize, this is not like dine mominus. Dine mominus, avi yodim sheilok, dine mominot, dine nefashot. Dine mominot, you're talking about a civil case. So let's say you cost the guy $1 million. And you're going to change your mind one day and you're going to say, how could I have done that to that poor guy? You could pay him back. You know, so okay. It's not forever. So dine mominot, adam no ten mamonu mitchaperlo. You could pay him back and do tshuva. What are you going to do to bring back his life, huh? Dinei nefashot, damo v'dam zarotav tuyim bo ad sof olam. You're going to be the one responsible, not only for his life, but for all of the unachieved parts of his life, the children that might have been there, the grandchildren. You're talking about murdering millions of people in the course of history. You're going to be able to pay that back? Remember what it says about Cain? Shekein matzino b'Cain sharag et achiv. Why does it say demei in the plural? Inomer dam achicha. Note it doesn't say your brother's blood. It says the bloods. Why is that? Because it includes all of the future generations that might have come from that brother. So damo v'dam zarotav, it's all on your head. Now, this is, the next piece is very parenthetical because we don't say this to the Eden. The next piece, we just say a shita about the meaning of the Loshon Rabim by Cain. But of course, it's not something we're going to say to the Edom because it undermines what we're trying to do, which is to scare them. Dover Acher, Tumei Achicha, means that his blood was scattered all over the place. I'm going to see later on that since this was the world's first murder, it was very inexpertly done, because after all, Cain was not sure where he's supposed to stab this guy to let out his soul. You know, maybe it's in his nose, you know, because that's where you breathe from. So he tried cutting his nose. Anyway, so he kept trying different parts of the body, and there was blood all over the place. I mean, this is a messy murder. So until he finally figured out how to kill him. But that's why it says Me'achicha. So it wants us to relive the messiest primal murder, all right? But we don't tell that to the Eden. Anyway, but here is the final blow that we give to these Eden, and this is incredible, Rashi. Leficha, Nivra Adam Yechidi, and you know why, of all of the species that are mentioned in Maaseh Bereishis, the only one that is created as a single entity instead of as a species is Adam, is a single man, that we have to worry about lo tov yot adam levado. It's to teach me that that's all that you need. You need one human in the world. And that is basically stands in for the entire function of humanity. So this teaches you, lelametcha shekola me'abed nefesh achat b'Yisrael, if you cause the death of even a single person in Yisrael, ma'alevalava katuv ki'ilu ibed olam male, it's like you destroyed an entire universe. And there it's, if you were Mekayim, you gave tzedakah, you helped a person, you saved his life, that is as if you were the one who created that entire world and you maintained that entire world. And that's what you need to understand about Dinei Nefashas. There's also other reasons. But this is fascinating. But again, this is not what we're going to tell the Eden. This just gives us the continued deeper understanding of the point. But listen. So what does this mean, right? But Pashas, what does this mean? This means that look at the responsibility that you have in going ahead and not being careful about what it is that you're saying that may cause this person to lose his life, right? Okay, we're going to see in a minute how this actually has to tie into the original way we understood that first Mishnah. But first, we've got a raised hand by Daniel, which means that he has something very important to interrupt the shir with.
I heard there is a nuscha, not to Israel, but Nivra, the Kol HaMetzir Nefesh Echad, without Israel.
It sounds like Trump just disbanded DEI. You know, so if you're working for DEI, I got news for you. You is out of a job. All right.
It also goes, let's say, well with the beginning of the...
Well, maybe it goes well with the end. Let's learn the first of the Mishnah. Okay. All right. Okay. So there's another reason. The other reason is, Mipnei Shiloma Briot, Shilo Yomar Adam L'Chaviro, Abba Gadol Mi'Avicha. We don't want any group of people saying, well, my daddy is bigger than your daddy. So this sounds like it's nothing, right? It's beautiful Pirush by Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, who says, this is the basis of all racism. This is Nazism. My daddy was better than your daddy, right? So it sounds like this childish issue. That's the whole idea of racism. So if, in fact, you would have these separate developments of Adam, so, my gosh, you know, I mean, look, you know, their IQ is lower, their noses are bigger, whatever, right? So, therefore, what we want to say is all of the development came from exactly the same sources racially. The only difference is the way that that was pursued, the level of Kesher, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Avodas Hashem, that was the only thing that made the differences in these choices. And therefore, you have those opportunities as well as we did. And racism is off the books. So that there's your DEI for today, in line of what Reb Daniel was bringing up. It's beautiful. We don't want people saying, well, you know, maybe there were different gods. There's the black god, and there's the red man's god, and so on and so forth. And to teach me the incredible gedula of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because you want to take a look at the complexity of the chokhmah of the world. You know, and you're used to your silly little creationist kind of ideas. You know, okay, what's a creationist kind of an idea? We make a little mold, you know, we put it over the dirt, next please, next on them, which of course would have meant that everybody looks the same, thinks the same, and so on, correct? So there, yeah, take a look. If a man is tovea kama matpeyot bechotam echad, so people want to mass produce things, right? So what do? When they clone them. That's all they could do. And every clone turns out to be the same. Kulam domim zelazet. Melech malchea melachim akadosh baruch hu, was tovea kol adam b'chotamo shel adam harishon. You start off with this DNA that includes in it every possible insane variation over all of the history of the earth. The ein echad mi'am dom l'chavero, huh? Is that incredible or not? What a different way of thinking about manufacturing, so much for creationism. L'fichach, kol echad v'echad chayav lomar b'shvili nivra olam. And therefore, everybody has to think to themselves, you know, the whole world, the whole universe could have been created just for me. So Rashi explains, this is so amazing. So Rashi explains, this is the iyum. The iyum on the Adam is exactly like the iyum in the Dini Mominis, except it's insanely more powerful. The eight says to himself, you mean my life is that valuable? And I am that important? I can't let myself be dragged into something like this. Is that incredible? The problem is not what I'm going to do to somebody else. The problem is what I'm going to do to myself, which, of course, is always the nature of tochacha. So the way to frighten the hell out of these witnesses is to get them to realize how valuable they are, how much life should mean to them. Wow, what a different way of looking at Iyum ala Eden, which is exactly the translation on a much higher scale than the Iyum of the Momon Eden. Because they're over there thinking, oh, people are going to think I'm an idiot over here. You're destroying your life as a total idiot. Veshema Tomar, then we tell the eight. So now I'm sure you're thinking to yourself, oh, get, I'm out of here, man. I don't want to have this kind of responsibility. Ma lo nova l'tzara azot, forget about it. I'm not going to testify. Halo kvar nemar. Vu aid, o ra'ah, o yada, im lo yagid v'nasav, oh no, you're stuck with the responsibility. You absolutely must be made. V'shema tomru, maybe you'll say, I mean, okay, I'll take the responsibility. for not having this guy killed, you know? And I'll be willing to be punished to save this guy's life. Ma lanu l'chuv b'damo shel zeh? No, that's a big mistake. Halok farnemar bi'ibud rishaim rina. The earth rejoices when people who need to be killed are killed. I have a little list. They never will be missed. Yes. So, Tana Rabbanan. Ketzad me'omet. So you said to the aide, maybe this was just like your own jumping to conclusions and that it was like a rational determination. So what that means is that essentially me'omet means it's just pure conjecture, right? So what do we say to them? What is pure conjecture? Because, I mean, pure conjecture in your mind means, you know, okay, put it together like an Agatha Christie novel, you know. Now we know who did the murder. On that basis, we're going to go and we're going to prosecute the murderer? That's not what it means. It means much more than that. Omer lehem, listen, maybe you saw something like a guy chasing after another man holding a knife. They run into a room in a churva. You run in after them a second later. The knife is dripping with blood. The victim is writhing on the floor in his last breaths. And you think, now you know who murdered him, right? That's bull. You didn't see a thing. Pure conjecture. So if you're talking about pure conjecture, so then, okay, if that's what you saw, if that's what you saw, you see a thing. That's not the basis of being able to prosecute somebody. That would be called pure conjecture. Now, you understand what we're talking about? Either you saw this or you didn't see this. Don't give us a bunch of bull about your brain. We need to know your eyes. What did you see? Not what did you think about this whole thing? See. Okay, so now, I mean, this raises all kinds of questions about whether there's such a thing as an absolute right. This is a lot of discussion in the Rishonim about the nature of this conjecture. So in other words, is the point over here that testimony means only what the Torah says, which is v'hu eid o ra'ah yada? Or is it, the way the Rambam explains it in the Pirush HaMishnayos, he says, look, you know, the point is, conjecture stretches over such a broad variety of the ability to bring proof. Okay, so now exactly how mathematically do you calculate the chances? I mean, there's something over here which is maybe gives you a 0.51 chance that this is the explanation out of the millions of possible explanations, because everything has millions of explanations, says the Rambam, of which you are really barely aware of any of them. So is it a 0.51? Is it a 0.83? Is it a 0.95? What exactly is acceptable? Therefore, says the Rambam, we cannot have anything which is not 100%, because once you do that, where do you draw the line exactly? And the ultimate result of this will be the complete breakdown into justice systems like you have in the U.S., people thrown for life into jail or given to chair, because, I mean, look, come on, I mean, it's so reasonable, beyond reasonable doubt. Now, okay, how do we define reasonable doubt, you understand? How many times, Hashem Yishmor, have innocent people given their entire lives to this reasonable doubt? God help us. Okay, so that's the Rambam's explanation. According to which, l'chora, that would mean if you really did have absolute equivalency to Adam, let's say a video cameras, is that an equivalency in terms of the raya? Or is the idea over here the nature of, as we've explained it, of the recreation ability of human testimony, which provides now a vision of what happened to you, the dying? Again, these are very important halachic considerations, which are the topic of a lot of discussion among the Rishonim and Acharonim. Okay, but this case clearly indicates we're not interested in what appears beyond reasonable doubt. That's not enough. Lo ra'item klum, you haven't seen a damn thing. Tanya Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Shetach. I tell you, Ereh ben Nechama, I swear, im lo ra'iti achad, I was in exactly this situation. I saw a guy, Ratzach HaChaver LeChurva, I chased after him, and I find him holding a knife dripping with blood. There's a murder victim lying on the ground, breathing his last breaths, writhing on the ground. Amarti lo, you Russia. Mi aragola ze. O ani o ata. Look, there's only two people here. Either I killed him or you killed him. Well, I know I didn't kill him. Avomaya ze. She'indam chama surbi adi. What am I supposed to do? Your blood is not given to me to be able to do anything about. So therefore, it's mashma that there were other people there, right? In other words, he's saying either you or me can't be really true, because then ein damcha misura biyadi has nothing to do with muhumad. It has to do with his being only an eid echad. So Tosfos says, okay, so there were other people, and we don't mention them because of the chashivas that we're talking about over here, of the gedula of Shimon ben Shetach. So he's saying either me or you. And, okay, I can't do anything about it. Shari Yomra Torah, Pishnaim Edim Yumat Amet. Hayodea Machshavot, Yifra Meoto Aisha Raget Chavero. But he who knows what's going on inside brains, he should take care of this murderer. Omer Lo Zozu Misham, they didn't walk out of that room before a Nachash came along and bit the guy, and he died on the spot. What? I understand. Nachash? This guy wasn't supposed to be bitten by a Nachash. He wasn't? No! Don't you understand? He's not meant to be bitten by a Nachash, because remember that Rabbi Yosef, for some sense, the Talmud of Hechizkiya, they taught that Miyom Shecharav Beit HaMikdash, even though we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, and therefore we don't have the best and by the Lishkas HaGozis to be able to function and allow the other Batikinim to function, so Afal Pishabata Sanhedrin, but the Arba Mitot Lo Batlo. What are you talking about, Lo Batlo? Of course they were Batlo. If you don't have the Beis HaGadol in the Beis HaMikdash, you don't have the Sanhedrin Katana to be able to be paskening Dinei Nefashos. What do you mean? We mean that you can't execute anyone, but those executions still take place. The Din Arba Mitot Lo Batlo. Let's say somebody was Chayev Skila. Okay, so guess what happens to him? He falls off of a roof. He gets crushed in a car crash. An animal tramples over him. The same type of things that would have happened to a person who was executed through skewer. Somebody was high of srefa. He might, you know, fall into a fire. His house burns down. A snake bites him. Because that's like burning through your body. Mishnet chayev hariga. You're supposed to be chayev sayef. Well, maybe the government gets him on some crazy charge or beheads him, you know? Or list him, boy, malav, he got some crazy ISIS member who cuts off his head. All right, so then he got the Misev Sayev. Mishnet Chayev Chenek, he's supposed to be strangled, so, okay, he may be strangled by drowning in a boating accident. Or Mate Besarunke, maybe he gets diphtheria and he can't breathe and strangles to death. But anyway, this guy was a murderer. Murderer is Chayev Sayev. So why was he bit by a snake, which is for something much more, which is a Chayev of Srefa? Says the Gemara, you think that this guy, the only thing he did in his life that he was Chayev Misa for was murder. He did lots of other things too, including Averis that were Chayev Srefa. So, and remember, the halacha is, that we're going to see in the Mishnah, Mishnet chayev shtei mitot beitin, if a person did two things and was chayev two different mitot, well, we got a problem, because we tried killing him and then killing him again, it didn't work. So what you're going to have to do is select which one of them was the more chamor, and that's the only way that you'll be able to deal with them. So the more chamor includes nidon b'chamura, includes the lesser. Okay, the next thing we said is maybe you want to give your testimony based on this mu'umat, we said. So on pure conjecture. Now, that's mashma, that only when it comes to dinei nefashot, because we're talking about the difference here between the way that we're ma'ayim on the edim b'dinei mamonos and the way we're ma'ayim on the Edom and Dinin Nefashot. So it's mashma that in the same event that you did see something and you jumped to conclusions, that testimony, if it was Dinin Mamonot, would have been acceptable? That's a big machlokas. Come on. So then, whose shita would the Mishnah be going according to, like Reb Acha? So remember Reb Acha, we had in Baba Kama before, that if we find a gamal who is ocher ben ha-gimalim, so remember that we said over there, camels become extremely aggressive when they're mating, and they will attack other camels, other males, and we find this camel who's in serious heat over here, and there's another camel that's dead, right at the side of this camel is currently mating. It's clear, says Reb Acha, that this camel is to blame for the death of this other male, and we will be mechayev, the owner of the camel, to pay. Now, that's pure conjecture, right? So, in other words, it seems that Reb Acha is the author of this Mishnah. This is only a shita that would go according to what he's saying, because this is complete conjecture, and therefore, it should be included in what we call circumstantial evidence. We don't accept circumstantial evidence. At least I thought we didn't. Apparently, you're saying over here that the fact that we did not list this in the Mishnah about Dine Momenes, and we only bring it up in Dine Nefashas, is that we're ready to accept circumstantial evidence when Momenes issues are involved. Says the Gemara, that doesn't follow. Let me ask you something. We say in the Mishnah, maybe it was conjecture. We also say, maybe it was hearsay. We also say, maybe it was aid me p aid, right? So are you going to tell me that we accept hearsay evidence? We accept aid me p aid evidence in Dine Momenes? We know that that's not true, because it says beferish in the Mishnah before. So latimer, if anything that's mentioned in this Mishnah and not in the previous Mishnah about Dine Momenes is meant to be specific, and that means that it doesn't apply to the previous Mishnah, how do you explain the fact that our Mishnah mentions aid me pi aid? Are you telling me that only b'dine nefashot? Hu d'lo amrino? We don't accept hearsay evidence only in dine nefashot, but we do in dine momenos? Well, how do you explain the fact that we had the Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechet? If the witness says, I know because so-and-so told me. So imu omer, who amar li shani chayav? Or he told me he's chayav. Ish ploni amar li shu chayav lo. Lo amar klum. Achi omar, he has to say right in front of us. And remember, we said that according to some Rishonim, that means he has to actually select the Edim and say to them, you are my Edim. That's the only time we'll accept it. So what do you see? Am afagav de psile bedine momenes, that just because something is possible for dine momenes, and it doesn't necessarily have to be mentioned in Dine Nefashas, in Dine Momenes. It could be we mention it only on Rina Luba Dine Nefashas. So maybe this is another example of that. Maybe the circumstantial evidence of Me'umad is in fact possible, not like Reb Acha, in Dine Momenes, and we only mention it in Dine Nefashot. We tell it to the Aiden, but we don't necessarily have to speak it out in the Dine Momenes. So that's not a proof. So we ended up being Mekayim, the Mishnah, whether Aliba the Reb Acha, or even if it's Lo Aliba the Reb Acha. So then the Mishnah says that we tell them, you should know that you're going to be responsible for all of the generations to come, because it says, Demei Achicha, Loshen Rabim. And that Demei includes not only his life, but the life of all of those that would have come from him. And then we said the other pshat is that there was blood scattered all over the place. It was a very bloody murder. Omer of Yudabere de Rivachia, what does that mean? Melamecha asakain de Hevelachiv Chaburot, Chaburot, Betsiot, Betsiot. He was stabbing him, cutting him, slashing him, oh my God, all over the place. Because he had no idea how do you kill someone. He figures you got to be able to kill someone somehow or another. But what's going to work? And he kept trying, you know, we'll cut off his nose, we'll cut off his ear, until he finally cut him through across the throat. From that day, where it says in the Pasuk that Ata Arur Ata Mina Adama Shepatzta Et Pia Lakachat Et Me'achicha Miyadecha. So you are cursed in the ground itself, which opened its mouth to celebrate, to swallow all of that blood, that never happened again. And the earth doesn't swallow blood anymore. It always leaves a telltale blood stain on the surface. So what seeps in, that's not called swallowing. Never happened again. So from that day, Miyom Shepatcha Haaretz Et Piyah, it never opened its mouth again. Shenemar Miknaf Haaretz, Zmirot Shamanu, Tzvilat Tzadik. It was from the edges of the earth that we heard the songs that were giving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's called the Tzadikah Shel Olam, and was giving Hallel to Tzadikah Shel Olam. What do you mean from the, that's a weird metaphor, from the edge of the earth? I mean, why don't you say from the mouth of the earth, right? Now, from the mouth of the earth, apparently because you can't use that as a metaphor, because the earth does not open its mouth. Heisvei Chizkia Achiv. Now, remember that we have Rabbi Yehuda and Chizkia were the children of Rabbi Chiya, right? B'nei Rabbi Chiya. They actually were twins, which is why we call them that. No spacesuit? So his brother, Chizkia, asked Yehuda, it says beferish that the earth opens its mouth. What are you talking about? Vatiftacha aretz et piya. So why are you saying the earth didn't open up its mouth? It swallowed Korach. Yeah, of course, it opens its mouth for bad things. I'm saying for good things, doesn't open up its mouth anymore. Is that the swallowing the dam so that the roshim of the dam should not exist in the world, which is a terrible thing to have to see? And remember, the whole churban of the Beis HaMikdash was brought because of the blood that continued to be pouring out, would never be satisfied, and so many thousands of people were killed because of that blood. It was terrible, the dam of the Navi Zechariah. But because of that, it was a good thing that the earth swallowed that blood and didn't let it out, that it shouldn't cause more dinim against the world. So that never happened again. But tova lo patra. V'yom Rebbe Yehuda b'Rebbe Rebbechia, you should know that going into galut is b'chaper half of an oven. So whatever you would have been chayiv, you're chayiv the last part. Because take a look at Kayin. The original klola on Kayin was v'hayiti na v'nat. And in the end, he only is v'yeshev be'eretz nod. And what happened to the na? So there's no na. He doesn't have to move around. And he only gets whatever the nod is. And he was sitting in the land of nod, which is his nod. So apparently half of the chiyah of the na was taken off because of the nod. Omer of Yehuda, galut mechaper shlosha dvarim. There's three things that, three different types of mothers that a golus will save one for. Shenemar, hayoshev b'yirazot. Here we're talking about the people that refused to surrender to Babel, and they continued to hold out. So Yirmiyahu said to them, whoever tries to continue to hold on to Yerushalayim is going to end up dying either b'cherev or b'ra'av or b'davar. So either by the sword or by starvation or by plague. But hayotzei, those who are ready to give in, surrender to the kasti, to the ones who are tsarim aleichem, he will live. V'choya. V'aytalo nafsho l'shalal. And at least he'll walk away with his life, even if everything else is lost. So you see that the golos would be mechaper for cherev, ra'av, and dover. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, golos is mechaper on everything. Because take a look at the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke about Yehoyachin. He was extremely angry at Yochin Melech Yehuda. And he says, as a Nevius, this is in Yirmiyahu, Ko amar Hashem, kitfu et ha'ish hazeh ariri, gever lo yitzlach v'sben, this Yehoyachin, he shall never be, first of all, have no children, and he should never have any success. He lo yitzlach mizaro ish, none of his descendants will ever succeed. To be Yoshev ha'kisei David u'moshel od b'Yehuda. They'll have no role in the governing of Yehuda, ever. And what happened? After Yechaniah ends up going into Golas, into Bogel. Bosa de Gola, what do we find? B'nei Yechaniah, Asir, Sha'altiel beno. What? I thought you said he's not going to have any children. And this is the one who basically has Zerubbabel, who ends up going and building the Beis HaMikdash. So how in the world could you say that he'll never have any Hatzlacha? So obviously the very fact that he went into Golus was Hatzlacha for everything. By the way, both of these names, remember, we very often, as the Gemara speaks out Farish in Megillah, you know, called Vorecha at Vorecha Echad, and we know how to decipher your sneaky ways of putting history into names where they're all referring to the same individual. So why was he called Asir? Well, because his mother conceived him in the Asir, in the Beit Asurim. So he was conceived in prison. And this is as we learned that the wife of Yehoyachin was lowered into this dungeon, which he was. And this dungeon was so small, was to torture him. He wasn't even able to sit down or to lie down in this dungeon. So they lowered this woman to him that he would be able to impregnate and that would have these children. So that's why he's called Sha'altiel, because Shishitalo El Shalo Kederach HaNishtalim, because this, the father, was able to be Shatlo, means he implanted him, is the Lashon, meaning that he impregnated the mother in an unusual way, because he had to actually impregnate her standing. And Gemiri She'ena Isha Mitaberet Mu'umad. Normally, it's much more difficult to have a real conception if the woman is standing up, because sperm doesn't get to deep down into the womb. And because of that, it was called Al Shem that Nes, that he Nitabra Mu'umad. They had this one chance of having sexual connection, and she was able to conceive in that strange position. Dover Acher is called Sha'altiel. Beautiful pshat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Sha'al El. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to go to the Beis Din Shel Ma'ala and to be Shoyel Hatara on the promise that he made. This guy's never going to have any children. Well, I made a mistake, so can I change my shvuah? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Shoyel El, and because of that we gave the name to that child. And why was he called Zerubbabel? Because he was Nizra, his mother became pregnant in Babel. So Zerubbabel means that he was conceived in Babel. It was implanted in Babel. Umashamo, but what was his real name? According to the Gemara, the Merumas here in Zerubbabel, Nechemya ben Chachal Yeshmo. His real name was Nechemya. Okay, all kinds of machlokasin about what we're talking about, the grandchild, or we're talking about the child, and it's also very strange because it seems very clear that Nechemya is not Zerubbabel from other places. Okay, then we shouldn't even speak about this interesting multi-identified individual. And now I see that our dear David has a ha'ora. Yes, Reb David.
No, it's a question. Yeah. I asked it earlier, but a little bit slowing too fast. In the previous Gemara, when we talked about a shofar that needs to leave, Lasakab or whatever, and he has to make sure of this. Are we talking about something in Gedola? Up to 48 shoftim can leave for their own business as long as there's 23
people. Right. We don't, because unless we have something that requires the Beis Din HaGadol to be in full session, then not mechuyav. I mean, that's such a rare thing, right? We don't be a shevet and a novi sheker and a dira nidachat, and so on and so forth. Okay, but generally speaking, all day long, you don't need 71 people sitting in Beis Din.